You're listening to the Business of Pharmacy podcast with me, your host, Mike Kelzer. Well, hello, Jerika. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you for having me. It's my pleasure to join you today.
Great to have you on the show. Hey, for our listeners that haven't come across you yet online, tell us who you are.
So I am Dr. Jerika Dodd. I am a pharmacist of 21 years. I have a PharmD from Florida A&M University in Tallahassee, Florida. I also have a master's in pharmacy administration from The Ohio State University. And I have a degree, was a master's in applied pharmacoeconomics. The concentration was applied pharmacoeconomics from University of Florida. And I have spent the majority of my career after completing my hospital residency at The Ohio State, spent the majority of my career in the pharmaceutical industry. I had a very short position as a hospital pharmacy manager, but the last 17 years of my career were spent in the pharmaceutical industry until August of 2018.
Wow, you've been around a little bit.
A little bit.
Those masters you talked about, did those coincide with each other as far as you didn't take those at the same time? Those were two separate ones.
Yes. The first master's program that I completed at The Ohio State was in conjunction with an ASHP accredited residency program. And that was a combined program of 24 months. It's 2 years, but we count down to easier to count down 24 months. That residency had a concentration in administration, though there was a clinical component to it as well. And then my last degree I completed well over 10 years later at University of Florida. So they were not in conjunction.
What possessed you to say, I'm going to go back to school after 10 years? That was for, was that the, applied
pharmacoeconomics?
Pharmacoeconomics.
Yes.
How do you decide that after 10 years?
Well, I have been working in the pharmaceutical industry, and I saw that there was a discipline within the industry of outcomes research, outcomes medical liaison. I was a medical liaison in the industry for the majority of the time. I was there for 15 of those 17 years. And so with that, I decided I got to interrupt you.
Sure. Or else I'll lose this. You were a liaison for what? A liaison makes it sound like a go-between. Between what and what were you the go-between?
Sure. I was a liaison between the pharmaceutical company that I was working for and the medical community, be it physicians, nurses, other pharmacists at community or academic institutions.
And this company manufacture drugs?
Yes. I work for several companies. I worked for Eli Lilly. I worked for Bristol Myers Squibb for a very short time. I worked for GlaxoSmithKline. I worked for Biogen IDEC. I think they're now Biogen, but at the time I was there, it was Biogen IDEC. And then I went and worked for smaller pharmaceutical companies like Intermune, which was purchased by Genentech at that time. And then the most recent company that I worked for was Helsinn Therapeutics, which is a privately owned pharmaceutical company based in Lugano, Switzerland.
All right. So this degree then, were you getting it to benefit yourself, or was it like something they needed to see certain letters behind your name kind of thing after this 10-year degree you went back with?
Oh, so that was to help me understand how to communicate the science as well as health outcomes, if you will, or pharmacoeconomics. To how do you sit in front of a payer, be it a medical director or a pharmacy director for a third party payer, be it the government or private industry? How do you explain to them the value of your product, not just talk science, not just talk price, which I didn't talk price. That was the commercial responsibility of the commercial team. However, how did you talk about the value of this product and how it affected life with regard to the quality of life? Was there a survival benefit? Because what healthcare payers do is they're looking at what an agent costs them and how to determine what that's really worth to them. How are patients getting better? Is there a survival benefit? So you're going to tell me that patients are going to live longer, and all of how is it going to impact their budget? And that depends on how many people they may have in their population with that condition. So there are lots of factors there. And that's definitely a very high level description, but talking more about the value and not just here's a drug and how much it costs, but what is the benefit of that?
Did someone push you into that, or you're just like, hey, this could help me?
That was just an interest that I had back when I did my.
Well, when I'm interested in things, I like. I listen to a 1 minute video on YouTube. I don't take a 2 year master's, but you knew it was for you.
Yes. Actually, I had my first pharmacoeconomics course when I was completing my master's in pharmacy administration, which, by the way, that program at The Ohio State trained you to be a hospital pharmacy administrator. So I had my first pharmacoeconomics class in that curriculum. And I said, I really like this. This is interesting. Wow. Looking at the cost benefit analysis of a particular therapy or agent.
Yeah. Now, would that help you? Is that a resume builder? I know you wanted to do this, but does that something someone would look at and say, all right, this opens up more avenues for you, or not necessarily?
I think that it did. When I was in the pharmaceutical industry, it definitely did, because I went from being a medical science liaison that covered therapeutic areas to a medical liaison that covered therapeutic areas, but with that special ability to be able to apply that medical knowledge to the, like I said, looking at the value of that product.
Gotcha.
So it was like a next progression for me, because I was a therapeutic MSL for 9 years. And after I'd been a therapeutic MSL for several different disease states. However, that was something that I had an interest in and wanted to pursue and further my career.
And then they can't say to you, well, Jerika, that's all well and good that you know how to treat people, but this is not turning out how we need it as a company and all that stuff. And then you can say, no, I know this. This is your value. This is the value proposition. Here's why it's good and all that kind of stuff. You could keep that story going, it sounds.
Well, you understand that when you are in a position as a third-party payer is in, there's a limited amount of budget money. You cannot pay for all therapies for all people.
Right.
And so in having to make those type of decisions with a finite budget and having to understand, yes, it can be the greatest invention or the greatest development, but how does that really impact my budget? How does it impact my population? Those are questions that I think that it, so usually there's not a question of if the therapy or agent works or not.
Yeah.
It's how well and how is that going to impact my population, my budget, lots of things that have to be considered.
Yeah, there's just walking down the grocery store, there's a lot of great products and things, but the question is how is it valued against what's left in your bank account too.
Right.
So that goes up to the population or to the bigger population.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so you're now, okay, now this is so interesting. I have to stop again and ask you before I even let you go any further. All these different companies, is that common in your profession that you come in and do? Because by the looks of you, you're only 29, so there's no way you could have been with all these companies. But is that common to like hit through all these because you're doing certain things, or were you moving quicker for a purpose?
anytime I made a move in the industry, it was always for a position that was more challenging, offered a different level to grow with regard to either my therapeutic knowledge, grow with regard to my capabilities as a medical science liaison. So it offered growth. Oftentimes, I've had that question before. Usually, after about anywhere from 2.5 to 3.5 years, things change generally in the pharmaceutical industry, and reorganizations and things like that happen. And so sometimes that happened, and I made a change because it was the best for me, and it was the best for my household. There was a time when one company that I was with changed the territories, and they did some layoffs. And when that happened, I retained my job, but my territory grew to a size that was no longer best for me to be able to work. And so I had to make a decision to move on. So if it wasn't a step up in the science or the therapeutic area or the job, just learning the job, then it could have been a condition such as that that happens.
All of a sudden they flipped the job description to the next page or something like that. So, that's really interesting. All right. So you did this, and then I heard you say 2018, but right now it's 2019 as we're talking. So what happens at that point?
So if you'll allow me to go back actually to 2015, I had gotten a position with a small company, and that position was eliminated. And so that gave me an opportunity to decide that I wanted to spend a year exploring, doing some things that I don't normally get to do because I had been working. And so that year, it's amazing that things happen in line and when they do. That year was the year that my father was diagnosed with stage 4 lymphoma. He is a Vietnam veteran and was likely exposed to Agent Orange. And I remember the Friday before Father's Day when he got that diagnosis, and they really didn't answer a lot of questions. They just kind of sent him on home and said, "We'll talk to you further on Monday." Yeah. 5 months later, my mother was hospitalized for triple bypass heart surgery. And she went into that surgery as my mother and came out almost seemingly like my grandmother, in that the level of cognitive function and dementia that resulted lasted for 2 years. And 5 months after my mother, I had to have brain surgery. So in 2016, I had brain surgery. And in all of those events and situations, I was an advocate both for my parents, because my mother could not definitely do and talk for herself with regard to talking with their healthcare practitioners. My father was totally stunned with his diagnosis. And then when I was in the hospital after my brain surgery, I surely spoke with the healthcare team that took care of me as if I was their peer, because I am. And I remember saying that at some point in their life, in a person's life, they're going to need a pharmacist. And I told my father that I was going to build something to help patients, to help advocate for patients being able to communicate with their practitioners. So once I got well, I went back to work, if you will, and my health started calling again, not for the same circumstances that led to brain surgery, but my health began to call again last year. Well, in 2017, I had already started building my pharmacy consulting practice, which is called Your Pharmacy Advocate. And in 2018, I made the decision, when my health began knocking at my door again, that I needed to focus and make my priority my health, and that it was going to require that I leave my job. So that was a very difficult decision, because I had a great manager and I enjoyed my job, but I knew that I needed to make my health the priority. So I finished in the industry August of 2018 and have been a full-time entrepreneur since.
Wow. Did that take off faster because you were able to then, it had to?
Yes. And partly because I definitely was able to give more attention to it because I wasn't working full time. And so I didn't have a divided attention. I'll also tell you that even from last August to this August, one of the things that happened that I surely didn't plan for and wasn't expecting is I learned how to do what I've been doing as I've been talking with you and sharing my story. And I've also learned, so I've done quite a bit of speaking. I do podcast interviews and do, you know, live speaking. And one of the things that I also learned is that there are a lot of pharmacists that are in the midst of the transition that's happening in our profession, especially those on the retail side. But I would say that it's in more sectors than just retail. And though it was not my plan, I have also begun building my coaching practice to coach women in pharmacy who are looking to make a transition. Pharmacists tend to be pretty analytical. And when things start to change, especially if they're out of our control, I listen and I read pharmacists' comments about the industry and what's happening. Yeah. And many people seem to be so caught off guard. Oh my gosh, how could this happen to me?
Right.
Why is it? I've been there this many years. You know, why are my tech hours being cut? Whatever. And I look at it as an opportunity to build the next phase, to do something new. So oftentimes I say we have our back against the wall. So I felt like when I was dealing with my health concerns last year, my back was against the wall because I'm trying to work, enjoy my job, and, you know, take care of myself. Yeah. However, my health is really beckoning that I pay it attention or I'm going to have something not so good happen. Yeah. And so I felt like, oh gosh, I have to make a decision. And I feel like that's, though it's a different scenario, often many of the pharmacists that we hear talk about the industry today, they feel that back against the wall kind of feeling.
Right.
And I think it's when, as you said, when you are in those situations and you have to do something.
Right.
I think you give it more than when you have a job and everything's going well and you think, well, maybe I'll do a little something on the side. It's more of a hobby. Well, when it becomes your bread and butter, your major source of income, you give it all that you have.
Yeah. Yeah. That's so true. And sometimes it seems that, I mean, I don't wish ill will on anybody, but sometimes if things are good enough, you don't make the leaps, because leaps can be dangerous. I mean, they call it a leap. You don't always land on always land on the other side.
Right.
You know, it's like our industry. I own an independent pharmacy in town, and things have gotten very tight. But I knew that. I knew that 25 years ago when I bought it from my dad, and I kind of looked at the projection of the slope kind of going down, and I could have made a leap. I could have made a leap, you know, 15, 20 years ago. And I love what I do. I used to like it more because I could count more money. I seem to like counting money. And that doesn't happen as much. But I could have. Mm-hmm. But you fall into it's, for me, it was more than good enough. I really enjoyed it. Mm-hmm. But people fall into why should I branch out, because I'm probably making more now and I probably have more job security than I would as an entrepreneur doing something else. But now with the, for our listeners that are maybe not up on this, there's been a lot of layoffs and store closings in the chains, which we've practically never seen before.
Right.
With 600 pharmacists being let go of Walmart and 200 Walgreens about to close, and you know, maybe PillPack and Amazon coming up, and it's been a real shakeup, more than I've seen in the last 25 years in the industry myself.
Right.
But things have always been good enough. And when they're good enough, you, especially if you come from an analytical mind of the pharmacist, in most cases, good enough is good enough.
Right, right.
Well, now it's now the options sometimes you say, well, if I'm making X and working X and this idea I have might bring in like 0.2X, it doesn't sound so good. But now if your X goes down to like 0.6X of whatever that means in the industry, mm-hmm. and then, you know, there it's closer between 0.6 and 0.2 than it was between X and 0.2.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So I'm sure you're seeing that like I am, and that's an opportunity for you, I would think, having more of these people interested in trying to find out what to do when their back is up against the wall.
And you know what I found is with the current coaching clients that I have, I've found that many have other dreams that these circumstances have caused them to think about pursuing. I have a client that is building her own personal training business, and she is a pharmacist. Actually, they're all pharmacists. I have another one that is building a photography business. And so it's giving them an option, which sometimes I think we get so used to our routine that to veer away from the straight and narrow that we're walking down. I think I had someone call me and say, do you think it's crazy if I want to be an owner of a Chick-fil-A franchise? And I said, no, if that's your heart's desire, I think that we get one opportunity to go through this life. And I surely don't want to get to the end and look back and say, well, I wonder what would have happened, or maybe I should have. I want to look back and say, I did it, whatever it was. And so I think in America in general, but we're talking about pharmacists, is we don't dream anymore.
No.
We just, and I have people that talk to me and say, well, I've never thought about doing anything else. I went to pharmacy school and that's the degree that I have. And I just thought that it was going to always be a great profession and that things would never be turned upside down they are in some cases. And it's really interesting because then I have people say, well, I'm not really sure what I like. I'm saying, well, I think it's important for you to take some time and think about who you are and what you like, because generally, if you can identify what it is that you like, what it is that you're passionate about, then you can decide if your next step is indeed going to be in pharmacy, or if your next step is, as I said, going to be a photographer or whatever else it is that you dreamt of building.
Yeah, it's too bad that I feel bad for myself at times, a lot of the pharmacists, and I guess any profession, where sometimes it seems that we're almost at a disadvantage because we were able to make choices relatively early in life. You know, we made the choice and we said, it's a good choice, and sometimes it's an expensive choice, but it's a choice, and you pat yourself on the back. And it seems sometimes that the people that maybe didn't make those choices don't have that narrow focus that can be a handicap at times, because they say, I didn't make a choice yet. I can do whatever the hell I want to do, you know?
Right, right.
So tell me about your road into pharmacy. Was that how did you end up going there? Was that something you wanted to do? And I know you alluded to it a little bit just before we talked in the show. And it sounds like there was something going on there that maybe this is almost like you're like your own self coach, like you're finally realizing what you're telling other people is true for yourself. Tell me about that.
So when I was in high school, I had no desire or even knowledge of a pharmacist beyond going to the drugstore to pick up medications for my grandparents and knowing that a pharmacist worked there. I was interested in being a high school English teacher. I wanted to teach students how to diagram sentences. I don't even know if they do that anymore.
No, I think they do.
They do?
So I think so.
Good. I think that's important. I wanted to teach students how to diagram sentences, and we were going to read novels like I did in the 12th grade and have quizzes and discuss the themes from these novels. And I actually was the president of the Future Teachers of America back in high school. And when I got the scholarship, I received a full scholarship to go to Florida A&M University. What do you know at 17 about what you want to do for the rest of your life?
Right.
I grew up in a family where my parents just made it very clear that their expectation was that you went to college. They had not finished college. They had some college, but they had not finished college. And so their focus was you have to go. They didn't get involved in what you should major in, those type of things. They left that to me. So literally, if you can imagine, because I'm definitely dating myself, there was no internet. It was a book, a hard copy catalog that you had. And I said at 17, teachers don't make any money. I need to pick something that will allow me to support and provide for myself. So I flipped through the catalog and I thought something in the health field. No to nursing, no to physical therapy. I think I'll do this pharmacy. And I closed the book. And I would never suggest haphazardly picking a major like I did. I never knew how much chemistry was involved. And so if you can imagine me semester after semester lamenting another chemistry class.
Right.
However, I graduated pharmacy school. I maintained my scholarship. So obviously I had to maintain the grades the entire time and became a pharmacist. And I will say that I feel like many times when I'm coaching, I'm secretly fulfilling that desire of being a teacher, just in a different way.
Right.
It's been a very rewarding career. And, you know, one of the things that I share when I speak with pharmacists is that in pharmacy school, they taught us to be pharmacists. And unless you were interested in having an independent pharmacy and building that business, which when I came through pharmacy school, that we had a class about that, but it wasn't really a big focus. The focus was retail or hospital. And so they taught us to be pharmacists, but unless you decided to go that independent pharmacy owner route, they did not teach us to make money. And that's what I think has been one of the biggest lessons for me is learning how, and which is why I think so many in our profession feel disgruntled that things are changing so, because ultimately we want to be able to provide for our families. We want to be able to provide, you know, the necessities as well as comforts of life. And when that is threatened, I think that's why we see some of the angst and anxiety and fear that we do, because people are may love doing what they do, but they're wondering, how am I going to provide for my family?
Yeah, and, for real.
You know, you used to watch those talk shows on TV, maybe, where people would have been in a particular career for a while, and then all of a sudden they woke up one day and they went and started, you know, baking cakes, and now they have a world-class bakery. And I would always look at those shows and think, wow, that's amazing. Like that they had the courage to do that, and never thought that I would be in a situation where I would almost be forced because of my health concerns to do the same. But, you know, when we would look at, I'm sure you would agree, when you'd look at those type of TV shows, you'd go, wow, that's amazing. I wish I could do something like that.
Yeah.
They have a lot of guts.
That's exactly right. And I think that, God, I would do the same thing with, like, you know, like, let's say I have a brother, like, in advertising, you know, or whatever. And back then, before the internet and before that, I never would have imagined doing, like, something like this, like talking and having a little podcast and so on. But back then, you'd be like, oh, I wish I could have or would have or should have. And it's like, things were too good, so you didn't. It's like they were too good for us, so we weren't pushed at all. And I hate the thought of these challenges, but I love, I guess, what can come out of it.
Right.
I'm not sure if I love that more than the insecurity of not having the money, but see that there's that balance, you know?
Well, and that's the thing is that though you may have an employer, I think if we're really, really honest, I just spoke with a pharmacist yesterday who talked about her spouse also being a pharmacist and that he worked for a chain that recently went bankrupt. And so things can happen. So even if you have an employer today, you might not have one tomorrow. And so I believe that it can potentially give a false sense of security, maybe not as volatile as it is to be an entrepreneur. But I would say that you probably would have to agree that being an entrepreneur has been one of the best rides of your life. Because you've learned, one, what you're made of. You've learned that your capabilities probably exceed more than you thought you were capable of. And the thing that I think about, even having the degrees that I've had and the experience that I've had, is all of that was not for naught. Mm-hmm. All of the transferable skills. For how many years, 15 years in the pharmaceutical industry, I spoke with healthcare practitioners conveying information, whether they were healthcare practitioners, you know, practicing and seeing patients, or whether they were healthcare practitioners that had transitioned into being business people because they were working for third-party payers. So there are many, in addition to our pharmacy education, that we may feel like, oh my gosh, I invested all of that time. I went to school a total of 10 years if you added up the six for the PharmD, two masters, and then two for the second masters.
Yeah.
That's 10 years. However, I don't lament any of it. And it's all being used some way or another to do what I'm working on now. There are lots of transferable skills that came from that are being put into place now. So I never look back and go, oh, that was a waste, you know, because it was, you know, after I finished my PharmD, the two masters, there was no scholarship there. So, but I still don't look back and go, oh, that was a waste. No.
Yeah.
All of it was a building block.
Back in my day, the pharmacy was a 5-year program, and I took 7 because I had 2 years. I had a year that I went down to a seminary, and I studied some theology, philosophy, some different things, and I wouldn't trade that. Mm-hmm. You know, I think it improved my writing skills, my speaking skills, you know, different reading and things like that until I got – it was pretty good until I got kicked out, you know? No, I didn't get kicked out, but God's got some plans. He pushes us in hard directions, but
and if he didn't, I believe we wouldn't go.
We wouldn't go. We wouldn't be. We wouldn't have that chance of a greater happiness, I guess.
And if he didn't, and we wouldn't go. And if he showed us all that was included, I think either the good, the ups and the downs, the goods and the good and the bad, I think we wouldn't go either.
We wouldn't go either.
And so
we wouldn't go either.
I tell you, we humans, we just have to kind of walk in blind faith sometimes because if we want to know so much. So many people say to me, well, I want to do this, but I just don't know the how. And I'm saying, you know what? You cannot have necessarily the how from A to Z all planned out and laid out, and then you just walk right through it. It doesn't always work that way. Sometimes you've heard people say, which is a scary thought, if you think literally, you've heard people say, you build the plane while you're flying it.
Yeah.
And sometimes that's how you do things, especially when you can't see a year down the road or 3 years down the road and you're feeling your way. The other thing that I learned in 2018, which if you think about our normal analytical bent, is to make decisions, make a decision and not be so fearful of, if I make the decision, then what? Oh my gosh, what if it's the wrong decision? I literally decided that I have to be able to make decisions and move. And if I find that I've made the wrong decision, then I change direction. Sometimes we want all the information we can possibly. I need all the facts. I need everything right. I need to know. And it just doesn't always work that way, that we're going to have all the information. You see, I went into pharmacy school, and even though I had the information on what the curriculum was, I believe if I'd looked at it, I wouldn't have, I would have never gone. But I made a decision. I walked forward. Yes, ran into all types of chemistry that was quite a surprise once I really realized what the curriculum consisted of. However, I made it. I still executed, and I feel like I made the right decision. I didn't have, well, like I said, I had the information, but wasn't wise enough at that time to even look at it. So sometimes in life, we have to make decisions. That paralysis of analysis or analysis of paralysis, it can, that in itself is a decision when we don't make a decision. And
well, that's true. That's certainly true.
Sometimes we will sit and wait and try to gather more evidence, more facts, more information. And sometimes you have to make decisions and you don't have everything. And then sometimes we have to make decisions and just have faith in what we know from our experience, the bit of, facts and knowledge and information that we have to make the decision. And you'll learn after you make it, whether it was the right thing or not.
Yeah, that's so true. And I think another one with the analysis paralysis is, I think, is the, when you do make that decision, I think make the decisions more quickly. And then also, the saying that perfection is the enemy of good enough.
Yes.
Because how many times do people not do something? Like I've been podcasting now for a couple months, and my first or second podcast, technology-wise, were junk. I was on this program just on my phone, and that's, I got into it because it was easier on this little phone app, but it was junky. It was dropping the calls and all that, and I thought, yeah, but if I don't do that and do it now and do another one Wednesday, another one Friday, and I learn, if I don't do it, I don't get to this spot. And it's like, yeah, they're not as good with the technology and maybe some skills I've picked up. But if I waited, I wouldn't be at this point. Right. I'd still be back 2 months ago thinking about it. Right. So you gotta just go sometimes.
Right. I talk to my coaching clients about not getting stuck in getting ready to get ready.
Yeah.
And I think that pharmacists are really good at getting ready to get ready. So people will say, well, maybe I need to go back and get another degree. But it's not because they necessarily feel that that's what they truly need. It's because I can hide over here because we love knowledge. And I definitely, you know, obviously I like to go to school too.
Right.
But if that's going to keep you from making a decision to move forward to whatever's next because you're fearful or you don't know all the things there are to know, it's very comfortable to get ready to get ready and to say, I'll just get another certification or another degree. But I would surmise whether a pharmacist is a BS pharmacist or a PharmD pharmacist, they have the experience and the training and the knowledge to do whatever's next. And if additional training is required, I suggest get it along the way, but it doesn't stop, you know, those who are saying, I don't know what to do. And what about health coaching? What about consulting? What about, because maybe you can start there and then keep going. Because as I found in this last year, most of what happened was not what I planned. The podcast interviews that I request that I got, the magazine covers that I was on, I didn't plan any of that. That was not my goal. Right. It wasn't what I said. These coaching clients wasn't what I set out looking for, but you start just putting one foot in front of the other. And I really do believe that when you're walking in the right direction, things will just open up. They'll happen the way they're supposed to. You'll learn lessons. You'll make mistakes. I remember working with a vendor and realizing that this was not going to be a good outcome for both parties, both businesses. Yeah. And one of the most valuable lessons I've learned on this journey is that when your values don't line up, that in itself can challenge the relationship. So yeah. It helped me understand that when I'm looking to work with an individual or a business or a vendor, that maybe I don't get on the phone and go, now, what are your values?
Sure.
However, sure. I'm understanding of how to have that conversation to identify, are we really for the same things? Do we really want the same outcome? Do we have the same values? And to me, that was an expensive lesson to learn, but oh my gosh, was it very valuable, because it informed future conversations that I have with individuals or companies.
Yes, for sure. Yeah. For sure. Yeah, the whole thing, I agree everything you said, and the whole thing about moving, you know, I always think of like a boat, you know, it's like if a boat's sitting there and there's a rudder and you can turn that rudder or the steering wheel in any direction, but you're better off having the steering wheel like 45 degrees in the wrong direction and moving. Once you move, you say, oh, I'm headed the wrong way.
Right.
And then you move it back and the wave mm-hmm. comes and so on. Mm-hmm. And yeah, you've got to be doing that. And I was just thinking about, you know, the opportunities we have just sitting like in my home little office here. And you think, my gosh, I'm talking to, you know, Jerika and I could right now, I could write a blog. I could right from here. I could do a book. I could do something on YouTube. I could call somebody up, do some coaching. I could do a million different things. Mm-hmm. And the testing, Tim Ferriss talks in his book, The 4-Hour Work Week, about testing, and it makes sense. You could put a Google ad out and say, like, you know, like we, in our day, Jerika, we had to go, you and I, we had to go through 4 years until we found out something, you know? And now you could put like a Google ad up A and a different up B, and you could put different titles on it, or say one, one, I'm going to cure your cancer, and the other one say I'm going to cure your heart disease, and see which one does better. And 3 hours later, you know your direction.
Yes.
It's like you can go so fast. So mm-hmm. you got to be moving, it seems.
Mm-hmm. Our world today moves very fast, and we have a vast amount of knowledge to try to sort through, assimilate, and understand. And so that's another reason why that paralysis of analysis, it's not useful.
I think pharmacists, we got well-trained at solving stuff, but there was kind of like an answer. There was the correct answer was this drip rate of something or other. It was a problem, but there was only one answer. Yeah. And I don't think we're real good at saying there's a problem, but maybe there's 10 different
right.
answers that are all right or they're all wrong.
So, you know, and it's interesting that you say that, because many times, I'll just say humans, we don't deal with ambiguity too well.
No.
And so oftentimes in entrepreneurship, when there isn't a right answer, if you will, there could be several answers. It depends on one who's asking the question. And so ambiguity can really be an uncomfortable place.
Mm-hmm.
But I think being able to be comfortable with not having all the answers, being comfortable in situations where there's ambiguity, I think it's, and I remember learning that when I worked at GlaxoSmithKline. They gave us a little handbook on being a medical science liaison,
yeah.
or their version of what they called it in that job position. And I remember it said flexibility and ambiguity, because things change all the time. And sometimes that's what upsets us is, oh my gosh, everything has changed. I didn't expect that. Humans don't really care for change.
No,
and
they
so
don't.
Learning to be flexible, learning to deal in situations of ambiguity. I remember being in the industry, and sometimes a direction would be given on one day to say, we're going left. And then next week, someone would say, you know what? I know we said we're going left, but now we're going to go right. And it would be the person who would say, okay, you say go right, we're going to go right. that would do and fare better than the one that would be like, what? What do you mean? You said left. Why? Just go right. And not saying that you should never, you know, have questions about what you're doing, but understanding that at the level where that decision was made, I trust that, you know, this is the way we need to go. And this is who I work for. So I'm going to go in the direction they say go.
We might be talking to the worst profession about ambiguity. I can't even say the word. We might be talking to the worst profession because in medicine, there's typically the right drug, the right dose, and all those kind of things. And it's just something that we're not really used to.
I think the thing, too, is that as you spoke of, we're used to solving problems that have one answer,
one answer.
A finite answer. And you and I know that entrepreneurship is not that way. And so when you're used to, for example, and this is not to qualify this for all pharmacists, but when you're used to, for example, reading prescriptions to find the error in dosing, because your job is patient safety. And making sure that you get the right drug to the right patient for the right reason and the right time. So it's a little uncomfortable to walk in a journey of stepping out from everything you know because, oh my gosh, what if I make a mistake? Yeah. You're used to looking for other people's mistakes.
Yeah.
So you'll find that sometimes people will have a level of perfectionism that you're like, wow. And you have to, along this entrepreneurship journey, give yourself grace to fail. I did a podcast interview yesterday and was asked, how do you look at failure? How do you deal with it? Have you failed? Yes, I have. I look at it as an opportunity to learn. And oftentimes in leadership and entrepreneurship, especially when you're doing something that the mainstream group of people are not doing, you're more afraid, and that ambiguity of I'm not really sure if this is right, because if you fail, everybody will know. Everybody's watching, especially now in these days of social media. But I have decided that I want to be able to say I tried. I think it's more important for me to say I tried, even if I fail. I have more respect for myself than to say I wonder what would have and what could have.
Yeah, that's exactly right. It's with the pharmacy profession, it's like not only are you get it right, they send auditors in to a year later, and it's
to
like
make sure you got it
it's
right.
Like 2 years later to come up and say. You failed 2 years ago. It's like, what? I'm used to hearing about my failures like the next day and moving on, you know?
When I was in the industry, it was always, it's sometimes daunting when you're a new medical science liaison for a company and you're learning all of the science, all of the clinical trials and learning the new people, the new physicians, nurses, pharmacists that you're calling on. One of the fears that I would tell you most MSLs have is, what if they ask me something I don't know? And it's like, well, you haven't had enough time to assimilate all this information that you're learning for a new company, a new drug, a new therapeutic area. So no one expects that you are a walking encyclopedia and that you know it all. But that's, you know, what if I don't know? And you learn, well, if I don't know, I'll find the answer and I'll get back to you. And so I think that that is one of the amazing skill sets of pharmacists, is that even if we don't know, if people say, oh, I want to do this, or I have a dream to do this, but I don't know how. You talked about the age of the internet. You can Google anything, and not that you want to Google, you know, how to start your, new venture necessarily and depend only on that. But I'm confident that the information you need is there. Or the people you need to be connected to, you either are already connected or you can get connected. And if they don't know, somebody knows someone who knows. I believe that there's nothing new under the sun. So whatever it is that people are thinking that they want to do, but they just don't know the how, there's either somebody to help you figure it out or you can find the answer.
Yeah.
It's there. I think that's not knowing is not enough of a reason to just say, well, I'll just stay here because I don't know how to build that.
And I think we come from a great profession And I can tell when people are not part of the pharmacy profession, because the pharmacists have always been, it seems, willing to help each other, whether it's an independent pharmacy sharing drugs, or whether it's, you know, someone else sharing knowledge. I think we've always been real, real good at wanting to see all of us succeed in that regard.
Right.
Let me ask this of you. If someone told you right now that you could not do anything business-wise, anything for any business improvement for a year, let's say you had a year sabbatical, how would you be spending your time for a year?
A year sabbatical?
Without improving the business.
Oh, gosh. Just for me personally.
Whatever. You know, like, would you be sitting around watching TV, traveling?
Oh.
Would it be building a house? I mean, what would you do if you had a year that you didn't have to worry about money and you couldn't improve your business per se?
I would spend that time doing a couple of things. One, I would volunteer. And two, I would travel. I think the reasons that I would do those two things are, one, I love interacting with people. And it's very rare that I meet a stranger. And so I love traveling because I like to talk to people who are also traveling and find out where they're from and what brings them, you know, to this part of the country or this part of the world. I also like to see how people live, because, one, I think it gives perspective in a couple of ways. In addition to volunteering, seeing how people live and helping with regard to volunteering, but with regard to travel, it gives perspective when you see how people live, whether they live better, I'm doing air quotes,
right,
better than you, or their living conditions are not as yours are.
Yeah.
It gives you perspective as to your place in the world. It gives you perspective, I feel, on maybe what we're called here to do.
Yeah.
When we are interacting with someone who is less fortunate than us, it gives a lot of perspective of how blessed we are, how maybe one of the things that I'm here to do is to bless because I've been blessed, to share because I have. And so I think that can be accomplished in both traveling to other places in the world and the country, and then also volunteering.
Would that volunteering in your year off, would that volunteering be down around the corner from you, or would it be on your travels?
I would say on my travels. I'm happy to volunteer wherever I can help. However, because I think that we have domestic needs and then there are definitely international needs.
Sure.
So I don't necessarily weigh one over the other.
Who has the greater need? If you have a year, you might as well get both at the same time.
Right. So definitely traveling, because what I know is that by the standards in the United States, many of us look around and say, oh, well, I'm not rich. And so definitely I'm not rich. But when I leave this country and go to many other places in the world, I realize that what's the percentile that we're in, that we live better than the majority?
We're like the 2% or something like that. I don't know all those. I don't know all those things, but we're certainly blessed. And you see that as you travel.
Yes, it gives a lot of perspective. I went to Tanzania, as they call it, in 2011, and I was amazed at the poverty that I saw compared to what we consider poverty in the United States. But what amazed me even more was how happy people were.
Yeah.
With a thatch roof and a dirt floor, they were happier than someone who has the luxuriest of cars and houses. And it was definitely a lesson to understand that happiness obviously comes from within. And that amazed me.
What replaces that money sometimes, like in yours, what you saw was not just the lack of money that makes people happy, but I think that there's a dependence on each other of we're not going to make it through this day, or we're not going to have any enjoyment unless we talk to each other and tell stories and bond and help each other and those kind of things. And so that's, I think, what sometimes the all of our riches can get in the way of. Maybe it's that we're able to separate ourselves from that need of the human need of bonding.
Yes, I think that it definitely to travel helps you connect with peoples of this world, if you will, and realize that there are more people who probably don't look like me and don't live like me.
Yeah.
And so to me, it's almost like you're going and you're having a world history lesson.
Truly.
In real time.
Truly.
And I think sometimes, you know, we've talked quite a bit today about just the opportunity to jump, to take the leap.
Yeah.
Analysis of paralysis. One of the things, and this is surely not to open up a conversation, a political conversation, and surely not to open up one on integration. But when we just look at humans in this world who try to come to our country and are willing to die, lose their lives to come do the jobs that you and I probably don't think about doing. And I think it's when I think of situations like that, I have not had to swim. My life's not been threatened.
Yeah.
You know, all of those things to get to the opportunities that are just mine just because where I happen to be born.
Yeah.
How dare I not take full advantage of the opportunities that I have when there are people who would die to have these opportunities?
Yeah, we certainly have, we certainly are blessed with the options. I mean, shoot, just having electricity to turn something on. We sure have that. I had to think of my son years ago, one of my sons years ago, and he said to me, "Dad," he said, "when we die," he said, can we go anywhere?" I said, "Anywhere you want, son." And he's like, "Anywhere we want?" You know, and I'm picturing that he's on a star riding to, you know, some nebula or something. I said, "Yeah, anywhere." He said, "I'm going to Florida."
Is he going to Disney World?
I guess so. I think he's going to Disney World. So I guess in closing here, that if we can help somebody, you know, maybe just take out the computer and write one more email to someone today, or make one more connection somehow. That's it just has to start by that you have to start moving, right?
Yes. Yes. And don't be afraid to ask for help or ask for support or ask questions. It's really tempting when we feel that we have arrived with regard to our education and our knowledge.
Right.
And I say that the more you know, you learn the more you don't know.
Mm-hmm.
And so if you're not growing and learning, I feel you're dying. There is no state of in between. So you're either growing, learning, or you're dying.
Right.
And so I look at these times as an opportunity to continue learning more so that I can continue growing into who I'm supposed to be 5, 10, 20 years from now.
Yeah. Yeah. It's hard to look out that distance, but that's why, you know, God has given us people like you and people who have been through the, you know, been through the carrying their cross a little bit, and you can look out and see some. It's kind of the old thing. Well, I've always said that about, I think my kids do that to me. They say, "If Dad can do it, I can do it." You know,
right.
So we all need each other to show that it can be done.
Right.
So,
right.
Well, Jerika, a pleasure talking to you.
You too, Mike. This has been great.
Thank you. I appreciate you
having me.
Yeah, I wish you all the best. How could somebody, how could someone follow up with a question or something with you? What's the best way to maybe learn a little bit more about you?
Sure. So the best way to connect with me is either on my website, which is yourpharmacyadvocate.com. Mm-hmm. There's a contact form or contact tab there where you can enter your information and a short message. Or as we do today, you can connect on social media. So I'm on Facebook at Your Pharmacy Advocate, or my Facebook account is Jerika L. Dodd, D-O-D-D, and Instagram, Jerika Speaks, or Your Pharmacy Advocate again, and then definitely on LinkedIn, there's a Your Pharmacy Advocate, and then I also have my own page, my own profile on LinkedIn as Jerika Dodd.
You're lucky you didn't just rob a bank or something like that, because you'd have a hard time hiding.
Well, that's why I don't rob banks.
No, that's a great thing. It's so nice to be able to get a hold of people and mm-hmm. in people's own ways that they'd want to do that. They can either kind of what do they call it? Kind of stalk you from afar, looking at some of the things, or they can reach out. But I'm sure you'd invite them to reach out and say hey to you. So, well, Jerika, thank you, and I look forward to staying in touch.
Yes, let's stay in touch. Thank you.
Thank you. Bye bye.
Bye.
You've been listening to the Business of Pharmacy podcast with me, your host, Mike Kelzer. Please subscribe for all future episodes.